Hello, Craig.
Hello, Craig. All right, so thank you, Lazarus, or Neomatrixology, for joining us here. This is my first time that I'm using a Discord server.
Thanks for having me.
In order to record this. Yeah, this is very exciting. And also, yes, this is actually my first podcast interview with anyone ever, really. I mean, where I'm giving the interview, and I've done an interview before where I was answering things, but this is new for me, so I hope you'll bear with me.
Oh, well, this is definitely an honor to be part of your first experience with being the interviewee. I have had a group podcast conversation about the Matrix Online specifically, but, you know, I guess I'm still a newbie in terms of being in the podcast space. So thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been really great for me to just this past year connect with all these different wonderful people who are in the cyberpunk community. I first discovered Neo Skies, and then I think I discovered you through Neo Skies, where maybe I was searching for something differently. And I just, you know, I thought that I was by myself. I thought I was alone. And it's so nice to meet, you know, these different people who were just as crazy about cyberpunk and, well, Matrix specifically for you as I am. So this is great.
Yeah, no, that's part of the fun of, you know, the technology and being a part of that. Like you said, my channel is specific to the Matrix, but I have been a cyberpunk fan, you know, for a very long time. I used to read like Isaac Asimov as a kid, and I've always been into, you know, Terminator, you know, especially in the 80s, growing up in the 80s and early 90s. I mean, if there was something VR or robot or Android or cyber board or technological, if I was in its path, I was going to soak it up. So
great. That actually leads right into one of my questions, but I want to do first things first. Well, I know that you, well, I haven't actually seen your face, so I don't know what you look like. And I definitely understand an interest in anonymity in the online realm. So I was just wondering, like, what details would you be willing to share about yourself? So I know your handle is Lazarus, but, like, and I think you mentioned that you're living in the United States, but are you American? Like, what do you do as
Yeah, I was born and raised in the U.S., East Coast. Like I said, I'm in the New York time zone, but I'm closer to Philadelphia. But yeah, I picked, I guess for me, it seemed like with what I was doing in terms of the Matrix, you know, the choice to be anonymous was more about, just because with everything that's going on in terms of like YouTubing and stuff like that, I thought it would be cool to, you know, kind of be that voice behind the screen, just how like when Neo is first searching for Morpheus and Trinity contacts him, and, you know, and then those first couple of times that, you know, he speaks to Morpheus, it's, you know, over the phone, like Morpheus calls him at work and then he calls him at the house,
and
they'll meet
course.
Us at the Adam Street yeah. Bridge. So, you know, we're all connected, but, you know, we're still, you know, not in the real world, you know. So, you know, I always refer to it as the YouTube Matrix and the Twitter Matrix. So that's kind of been my thing. But to your point, you know, when I covered, I believe it was the Sophia Stewart case and the Tom Althaus case, like, you know, some people reached out to me and, you know, things got a little weird. So that just kind of reinforced my idea to, you know, I guess not put my name out there or not have like my personal information out there, just because, you know, at this point, you know, I don't know how deep the rabbit hole actually goes. So I'm just going to, you know, keep that at bay for now. But I will be at the event, the Project Matriculated event that we're trying to put together. I know some of the original Matrixologists, the original guys on Twitter who were interacting with the YouTube channel when the Matrix 4 was first announced. I got to go back and dig up the original tweet, because I don't know who like originally sparked the idea, but somebody basically said, oh, it'd be really cool if we could all watch the movie together when it premiered. And I was like, well, if you want to throw a party. Yeah, I was like, you know, we can, you know, I'll get a venue if you guys are serious about throwing a party. So,
absolutely, that would be an amazing experience.
Yeah, it'll be a lot. Like, I went to the venue and took some video there, and it looks great. So, yeah, I'll be there. So, if somebody like is like really like, oh, I'd love to meet this guy, that's gonna be the opportunity.
That would be, I guess, May 20th or 21st, 2021, right?
Right. Well, that's the tricky part right now in terms of, you know, because it's so far away, you know, I talked to the movie theaters, you know, they say that, you know, pretty much any movie that big is going to have the, what's that, the, like the early screening or whatever, you know, the night before. So that's the goal, is the goal is to have the event actually on that Thursday, the 20th, because the actual release date is the 21st. That way, we, you know, we have that early screening. We could say we saw it first and all that fun stuff.
And that's assuming that there are no delays or changes or anything like that.
Exactly. I'm definitely keeping that in my back pocket.
I find it very difficult to believe. Yeah, I find it very difficult to believe that they would have, what was it, John Wick 4 and Matrix 4 on the same day. Like, I'm sure one of them is going to have to move.
Yeah, I actually did a whole video on why I don't think that that's actually going to happen. It's just the competition with movies today, you know, that most industries are suffering from, you know, technological changes and things of that nature. And, you know, the movie companies are no different. They're trying to get seats, bottoms in seats, and that kind of competition for an action movie. Somebody's going to have to change. I mean, it's a game of chicken. And the thing about it is Warner has played this game before, but before when they were playing with the MCU and with these big comic book movies. And yeah, they lost. You know, they would move their date every single time. I think it was Batman and Superman. So we've seen this show before. Warner has moved before, but even with everything going on with you know, the virus epidemic, you know, when it comes to the Matrix, they're like, hey guys, we're staying on schedule. I think a lot of that might have to do with Keanu Reeves' schedule and Lambert Wilson's schedule. I don't know what kind of contract negotiations they had to make in order to get those guys. But it looks like they're trying to do everything they can to not have any delays. I'm wondering if some of that has to do with Keanu Reeves having to be available for this John Wick 4. Now, when the Matrix 4 was announced and they talked about the scheduling, you know, them shooting in San Francisco in February, Keanu Reeves' John Wick 4 script hadn't even been finished yet. So I don't know if they finished it since then. I would hope that they had at least finished the script by now, but you're talking, you know, back, you know, in January or December, the script wasn't even done yet. So if I had to guess, John Wick 4 is going to be the one that moves their date this time around, because the Matrix is already shooting. You know, the post-production as far as the CGI stuff doesn't take as long as it used to. So I didn't want them to rush it. You know, I want them to take their time. You know, I want it to be a good film. I don't want it to be a rushed film. I don't want it to feel rushed. But if I had to guess, just with the way everything seems to be going so far, it would look like John Wick 4 is going to be the one who had to move their date, even though they were the one who announced their date first. So we'll see how it plays out, though.
Sure, definitely. I just want to ask you very quickly. I don't want any specifics, obviously, about your name or who you are or anything like that, but I would like to know a bit about your background. Like, you said that you have been into cyberpunk and sci-fi a lot in your past. Do you have any experience with like hacking or creating code? Is that like what you do as your job, or like writing?
I'm actually you know, I've done music and DJ and production like that. That would be as far as my coding goes. You know, I do use the technology to produce music and things like that. But yeah, you know, growing up in, like I said, the 80s and, you know, the early 90s, I mean, you know, I was definitely into movies like hackers and that whole hacker culture kind of idea. But, you know, as far as those kind of things go, I didn't have any real experience. I mean, there was a couple of tricks that I knew that, you know, I learned online that were, you know, application based, nothing of me coding and like, you know, breaking into servers or anything wild like that. But I guess I've always felt technologically savvy. Like when I was, you know, a teenager, I always wanted to have, you know, the newest thing and kind of kept up to date with, you know, the things that were coming out and, you know, like first kid on the block with a PlayStation kind of thing, you know, right. Cause I was late to the Nintendo party. Like I was late to, that. So I wanted to like overcompensate. So like I had to be the first kid with Super Nintendo and the first kid with, PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I don't have any like formal training. I didn't go to school for computer science or anything like that. I've always liked, I guess, the potential of what technology and humanity could do together. I think a lot of it is just the timing of when I grew up too. Is just, you know, I felt like I kind of grew up with the technology in a lot of ways, you know, just being, you know, I feel like, you know, people who were able to, like myself, I guess, see a lot of the world before technology had the grasp that it does have now. So like, I kind of feel like I grew up with it in a way that I saw the old world and I can, you know, experience the new world, but I'm not so old that technology is foreign to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I was very late to the video. Well, I had like the first tech, I guess you can call it a video game, was the Game Boy Color. And then my parents were against getting video games until I was a certain age. I think it was like 13 years old.
Oh, wow. So
my cousins had all the different systems, but my first console was the GameCube. And I'd always been playing on the computer before that, but so I was still playing video games.
There you go. That was another one. I had when I was a kid, I think my first computer I got, I think like Christmas when I was 8. So, you know, I've always kind of like had experience with computers, you know?
My first game was Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. And the game came in like 3 different floppy disks.
Yeah, floppy.
It was old. It was, you know, it was like, I don't know, 16-bit where you just click like use and then click a part of the map and he would use something.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Yeah, you know, there's more memory in our phones and watches than there are in those whole, like, you know, old games, consoles and computers. I think I had like a 256K Tandy or something like that. So,
my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that leads me to my next question. We're kind of doubling up the order that I had planned, which is... Okay, so you've always been into science fiction, and you said earlier that you liked cyberpunk things like The Terminator, and I forget what else.
I mentioned reading Asimov. That was like a real big early influence.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So those two things, like Terminator, I would consider cyberpunk for sure. Asimov, I guess it would be cyberpunk, but it is. Normally I would think of it as more science fiction. And that's the thing.
He was kind of like a pioneer to it in a way, like I said, science fiction, but at a time where like still his time was when, you know, really kind of only scientists were writing this stuff because nobody else knew what the hell they were talking about. You know?
Yeah. Well, the 3 laws of robotics was very interesting. Then we had the movie that was very, very, very loosely based on that.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's exactly that. It's not the same as what he was doing, but like you said, it was loosely based. But again, I felt like those kind of guys laid the foundation. I mean, you know, everybody's going to remember Star Trek and stuff like that because it was on television. But
so a lot of what I've seen is that the and correct me if you have a different view of it, but like a lot of things I've seen is that the 2 foundational beginnings of what we call now a cyberpunk is Blade Runner and Neuromancer by William Gibson. And I think that beyond that, everyone has a different, in the cyberpunk community, has a different definition for cyberpunk. So my question to you is, what does cyberpunk mean to you? And what are some other classic cyberpunk media that you really enjoy?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, I know of Neuromancer in terms of my research of the history of the Matrix, but I haven't read it for myself. You know, I've only, you know, I guess read summaries, just doing research about, you know, different influences for where the Matrix came from, because that's the funny thing about the Matrix. You've got all these different sects where people say, oh, the Matrix ripped off Neuromancer, or the Matrix ripped off Socrates, or, you know, the Matrix ripped off this, you know, and people pick this one thing, or the Immortals, Grant Morrison. You know, it's not, to me, one thing, it's many things. So
absolutely, yeah.
When you say Blade Runner, I actually do vaguely remember seeing the original Blade Runner, because that's the 80s. I was really young. I probably shouldn't have been watching that movie, but my mind was blown. Like, you know, if you're gonna talk about early influences to cyberpunk, you know, I do remember watching Blade Runner, and like I said, because at that time I was just so infatuated with anything android or cyborg or robotic. I mean, I loved it, you know. Right. I thought it was mm-hmm. it was pretty dark, you know. I mean, but at the time, you know, I mean, even technically the Dark Crystal was kind of dark, right? Like, I mean, there was kid stuff that was dark at that time in the 80s. It was just kind of a look that was happening in film. And
the Batman animated series,
even that Michael Keaton, right, that's Tim Burton, that version that's of right. Batman, mm-hmm. you know, it had a very dark look to it. So, and I was into all that stuff. So, I remember Harrison Ford and, you know, the end of the movie and just kind of like being like, whoa, like.
how would you define cyberpunk? And like, if you had to say, you know, since you're a fan of cyberpunk, if I held you up against the wall and said, all right, give me your favorites. But other than The Matrix, I guess, obviously, but like, what are some classics from cyberpunk that you think is like the gold standard?
Okay, so I guess for me, I have a more loose, like I don't have a strict definition. So like for me, cyberpunk is just kind of, this futuristic technology kind of base story. So for me, something like The Lawnmower Man would be cyberpunk. You know, that's okay. more based in VR. But you know, it's not at the time, it wasn't supposed to be like in the future. You know, that was supposed to be something that was happening, you know, contemporary to the time it came out. But a lot of times, I lean more towards the stories, and usually I lean more towards a story that is supposed to take place in the future, like a Terminator would be one of my favorites. That's non-Matrix. That's a really good question.
Which Terminator are we talking about?
Well, okay. I'm a fan of the series. I did not like Dark Fate. I understand why. Terminator 3 was cheesy in a sense that I feel like when you have franchises like that and sequels, a lot of times like they're kind of like oscillating or like repeating or repackaging the original story. So like, you know, when you get to 3, you know, that's where you're at that point where, okay, they're just kind of making this to get a check, and you've got like Talk to the Hand and Arnold Schwarzenegger putting on the, you know, the star glasses, and you know, there's cheesy stuff in it. But in terms of the story, in terms of what was going on there, I mean, there were things there that I did like. I think up until Dark Fate, 3 was kind of the only one that I would say wasn't as good. But you know, I remember seeing it in the theater, and as a big blockbuster film, I mean, it did what it was supposed to do at that time. Like, people look back at it and see how bad it was. But to me, when it was new, I mean, it was kind of living up to the standard of blockbusters of its time. Now, you know, then you go to a Salvation. You know, a lot of people didn't like Salvation. I kind of see it as the black sheep of the series. What I did like about it is I felt like that one tried to take a step away from just repeating the same repackaged story by making Marcus the main character instead of John Connor. Now, John Connor is in it and he has a big role. And to be honest with you, Christian Bale almost ruined it for me because he had his Batman voice and I can't stand his Batman voice. But but he didn't ruin it for me. It was okay, you know. I mean, he did an okay performance. It wasn't super terrible, I thought you know, where a lot of people don't like Salvation because it's different, I actually appreciated the fact that they try to be different. Then you jump to Genesis, and that's the other thing. You've got all these changing hands and all these different people now coming to the project. I felt like that was part of what didn't work about like the new Star Wars between one and two, you know, because you change directors and it's like a different voice, and it kind of confuses audiences. And I think that's a lot of what happened between Salvation and Genesis. Like, you know, it's just this kind of all new thing. And again, I liked some things that Genesis brought to the table, trying to not be exactly like the first and second Terminator. Now, unfortunately, from a scene perspective, a lot of the chase stuff and a lot of the stuff is, again, oscillating, repeating what we've seen before and just kind of repackaging it. But in terms of the story, I actually mentioned this in one of my videos, how they explain the kind of multiverse time travel situation where, you know, different realities can merge. That was the idea of our machine faction in the Matrix Online. And I created that idea mm-hmm. before Genesis. Mm-hmm. So when I saw Genesis and saw this, I call it sci-fi coincidence, where, you know, someone has expressed a similar idea, but we've never mm-hmm. met. I always that's thought that true. That's like, you know, that's always been like one of the coolest things about people to me. Like, I mean, because, you know, the thing happens even with scientific developments, right? Like guys from different countries who speak different languages who didn't share scientific notes or scientific information come up with like these same discoveries around the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like once, you know, this collective consciousness, like once the idea is out there, it's out there, and whoever wants to receive it can pick it up and tap into that information. You know, that's a whole nother spiritual kind of conversation. But yeah, when I saw that idea expressed in film, and like I said, we were playing with it with the Matrix Online, I mean, my mind was blown. So I kind of have like a personal attachment to that series, even though, again, I can get from a production or writing quality standpoint why people might not like Genesis. Mm-hmm. You know, I still had fun with it. And that's the other thing. Once you get to like the fifth sequel, you know, the fourth sequel, my expectations are way low. Like, I'm not going to expect the fourth or fifth episode of a movie series to be as good as the first or the second. And, you know, I think a lot of what made the Terminator franchise such a success is how good the second sequel was in an era where people expected the sequels to be bad. So that kind mm-hmm. of, you know, that kind of, while that success is great for the movie company financially, again, once you've done that, once you've raised the expectation, that bar stays high. And I feel like, you know, the majority of the audiences want to always surpass it and see that bar raised and raised. And it just usually doesn't work out that way. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
I was just saying it's very hard to keep up, like, once you have 3 and 4 and 5, how many ideas can you have? Like, how can you keep on one-upping yourself? It just becomes very challenging to continue with sequels. And I think the only franchise that's really been able to do that just since is Fast and Furious, I guess.
Oh, man, yeah. They're 9 now. Yeah, they're getting ready to hit double digits. And I've had that experience with even creating music. You know, you make a song that has some traction or that people really enjoy, and then you kind of run into this wall like, well, how do I top that? You know, how do I beat that? I was going to say, speaking of James Cameron, I thought Alita Battle Angel came out really well. And I wouldn't say that it's one of my favorites, but I would consider something like that cyberpunk for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I found out that it was coming out, I think I read a bit of first off, there's the anime movie. So I watched that first.
Right.
And then there's the actual comics, the anime comics that I read a bit of that. And then I watched the movie. And so I compared that with like the anime comics. The anime comics go really far and it's really deep. So there's a lot of things they can do with that. So I'm really, I think there will be a sequel. I really enjoyed it myself personally. But I do think like, I really enjoyed Alita as like, she's like, fresh new person, as if she was just born. She had this appreciation of the world, which I really enjoyed. But then at the same time, I felt like it was a little bit kind of geared for, made for a younger audience, perhaps.
I definitely felt that.
Yeah. Target audience. Yeah.
Now, I'm glad that you said anime, though, because to answer your original question in terms of cyberpunk, yeah, when I go back, you saying that reminds me, I did used to watch Standalone Complex, you know, Ghost in the Shell.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely consider that cyberpunk like that. I mean, again, that was something when I saw it at, by then I was a teenager, but my mind was just blown. Like, I didn't even know how to take it all in right away. Like, I had to go back and watch it on Adult Swim as an adult for it to really kind of soak in.
That's interesting. Yeah. I watched Standalone Complex, but just by finding it online. And I think I watched Ghost in the Shell first, the anime film, and then the live action. I personally liked the live action a little bit better, but there are parts of it that were like better in each of the different ones. If I had to take the perfect example of just visually, and just everything, production and like setting and everything. Like for me, Ghost in the Shell live action is like takes it's the best in my opinion, just because of the setting. And you know, some people were complaining about Scarlett Johansson. I thought she was fine in that movie. And it's just it's visually very, very pretty. And I think the director of the film hasn't done much before, but I think one of the other things they did was, if I'm wrong, but Oblivion. And that's also visually very pretty, just from like set design.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen that yet. Yeah,
I highly recommend it. It's it's not quite science. It's not quite well. It's definitely science fiction. So I know you'll like it. It's not quite cyberpunk, but it's close. You just have to see it for yourself. But anyways, we keep on veering off topic here. Okay, so, but definitely my so if I had to say like a typical cyberpunk, I would say Ghost in the Shell. But in terms of my favorite of all time, it would honestly be The Matrix. I have my own reasons why I like The Matrix. Obviously, you like it too because of Dying Room of Startles, you know, Neo Matrixology and the video games and whatnot. So my question to you is, why do you like The Matrix so much, perhaps more than other movies? And you probably won't like me asking you this question, but which one of the three is your favorite?
Oh, you say three, and it's funny, I just actually commented on this. I might actually have to say that the Animatrix might be my favorite just because the way that it hit me so differently than the other three films. And I also feel that my... you know, answers that as biased in the sense that, you know, when I heard that the Wachowskis said that, you know, really this was supposed to be, you know, the trilogy 1, 2, and 3, Original, Reloaded, and Revolutions are all supposed to be kind of one piece that they split up. And when I look back at the experience and how I believe the audience members should experience it, yeah, they are, you know, three chapters of kind of the same film in that way. And so you know what I mean? In my mind, I don't necessarily split them up after hearing them say that was the design. But they are very different, and I understand that's why a lot of audience members kind of fell off between the original and Reloaded, and even more so between Reloaded and Revolutions. But what was your first part of that question again? Why did I fall in love with The Matrix?
Why do you like The Matrix so much?
Okay, that's definitely that's got a lot of parts to it. Part of it is my personality, just that, you know, I have that obsessive personality where I'm all or nothing. And when I love something, I want to know everything about it. You know, so I dove all the way in. You know, there was an intrigue. And, you know, at the time, you know, websites were popping up all over the place. You know, what is The Matrix? And, you know, they had their own official website, and that's where they put the comics up. And, you know, it just felt like there was more. It felt like, you know, they asked these philosophical questions that some of which I had asked myself, some of which were new to me. It opened me up to new questions. And I saw that it opened up a lot of people to new questions. So I guess really to answer your question, I should take you to my first Matrix experience, which I invite people to share in my introduction video, but I actually haven't shared it. So this is going to be exclusive for Cyberpunk Matrix.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah. So it's 1999, and I hadn't even seen a trailer for it. You know, like I said, I was all into everything, technology, and these kind of action movies were right up my alley. But I didn't even know that it was out. And I mean, this is literally like the weekend it came out. And a friend of mine who knew I was into this kind of stuff, he says, "Man, dude, have you seen this movie?" And I'm like, "What? What are you even talking about?" He's like, "What? You don't know what I'm talking about? Get the car, we're going right now." So wow. Yeah. Like, he knew
that's probably the best way. Film. Yeah, a lot of the best movie experiences in my experience is I ask what it's about, my friend just says just watch it, and you don't know it. You have no idea, and you just watch and it becomes like, what is this? And you don't know.
And it wasn't just
like an experience.
And in this case, it wasn't just watch it. It was, you need to see this. Like, he knew that it was going to mean something to me.
Sure.
And when we got there, you know, like I said, this is on the fly, this is spur of the moment. So when we got there, we walked in. It was still early. I mean, but it was like just when, so I missed the conversation. I missed the call with Cypher and Trinity. And I probably like, I'm probably like finding my seat as Agent Smith is talking to the police officer and saying, your squad's dead already. And I'm sitting down, you know what I mean? So I missed a couple, you know, like not even a whole 2 minutes, maybe, but like a minute and a half or so.
You missed the Trinity kick, right? Against the policeman?
No, that's what I'm saying. When I sit down and get myself together and look up, as soon as I look up, she's in the air and bullet time. Oh, and like you said, yeah, dude, that's like my first impression. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
That hit people so
hard. I was shocked in. I was hooked. I was hooked. You know what I mean? Like just from that moment, it was like I was all the way in, all the way invested into the story. And to the point I made before about people falling off between Reloaded and Revolutions. I mean, the first one is a classic. You know, most people don't dispute that the first one is a good movie. I mean, it was just good. And it's good because it does follow those formulaic rules that, you know, action films stick to even today and prior to that time. But the visuals, the use of technology, the fact that they explained in a way why we're seeing bullet time, like, you know, it's actually justified in the story, you know, because after that, all these movies came and just used bullet time just because it's a cool effect. But in The Matrix, we actually had a reason of why we want to see time manipulated and see these things from different angles and understanding that it's a program, it's a simulation. And yeah, there was just so many things in that first film that I was happy to be able to experience, you know, as a moviegoer. And that's the thing. I know that the Wachowskis talk about how they were, you know, fans of films, fans of movies. And you can see a lot of that fandom in The Matrix, in the trilogy as a whole. And a lot of that is what we were saying before, just about it being a lot of things. And it's got all these layers. Yeah, I didn't really unpeel the layers until the trilogy was over and until I went back and watched it again. But in that first viewing, because there's so many different influences, there's so many different genres, it's this mix of so many things, you know, kung fu, I loved kung fu, technology, you know, video games, like I felt like there were all the anime, I felt like there were all these elements already there. So it's like, you know, this is almost not, you know, not to be ego, me, but it felt like it was made for me.
Getting all so, the right pressure points, sure, yeah. Definitely.
You know, exactly. It hit all the points that I wanted in a movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's very interesting, all that you're saying. And I feel like my viewing experience was perhaps one of the most atypical of the majority of people who watch the films. So I watched Reloaded before I watched the original Matrix.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. So like I knew that.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, tell me about this. I'm curious about this.
I moved to, okay, so like I was born in the US, but then I moved to France when I was five. That would have been 1995 or so. And so I was in France at the time when The Matrix came out in 1999, and then I moved to Austria because my father was working with the United Nations. And so wow. Once I moved to my school, obviously, like, there isn't this, like, we had to wait for the American films to come to Europe just a little bit. But, like, The Matrix was out, and I heard references of it, like, through friends, but at school or something, and I was pretty young at the time, and I didn't see any reason. I just didn't hear enough about it to want to go see it. I just knew that there was something called bullet time and it was supposed to be cool, but I never seen it for myself. But I kept on hearing more and more about it and I felt like I wanted to go check it out. And so then when Reloaded came out in the theaters, I started seeing the trailers for it, which was really cool. And so I decided to go see it with my dad. And so I went to see it without knowing what The Matrix was, and it was incredibly confusing. You know, like, it was so confusing. And I think part of that made it really appealing because I had to piece together what The Matrix was without anyone telling me what it was. And so,
wow.
Yeah, and so I watched it and I was like, how did they, you know, and then just like piecing it together with everyone who was just talking as if they knew what they were talking about. And so I understood maybe like 50 to 75% of Matrix Reloaded. But that really made me want to watch the original. And then when I watched the original, it's kind of like watching a prequel that explained everything. And that's when it was like, Oh, okay, I get it now. Because The Matrix Reloaded was the first film that I saw, that's the movie that gave me the wow factor, where I saw all the Smiths and the fight scene with all the Smiths and just the car chase scene. And so, like, that was, to me, the first introduction to The Matrix.
What I was going to say is, what's cool about your experience is, I mean, not that you would have anyway. I mean, you seem to like cyberpunk in general, so you probably would have survived the entire trilogy anyway. But a lot of what people don't like about Reloaded is that it, you know, it changes the rules. It doesn't follow those same, you know, formulaic rules that the first one does. So you didn't feel betrayed the way that a lot of audience members felt betrayed when they get to Reloaded, because Reloaded is the deconstruction and Revolutions is the reconstruction. But a lot of people, you know, they feel attacked in a way experiencing that deconstruction, because, you know, you find out at the end. And I think a lot of what happens, too, is that speech with the architect, because it's so verbose and wordy, that, you know, people get lost in the. Yeah, you know, get lost in that monologue a little bit there. But, you know, you find out a lot, and whether, and that's what I was going to say, whether you processed all the words or not, I feel like a lot of people pick up on the fact that he's saying everything you thought you knew, you don't know.
Yeah.
People do not like that.
I loved all three of them. I would say, you know, I liked, if I had to choose a favorite, I would say for myself personally, Reloaded is my favorite. This Matrix Original is a close second. But like you, I also see it as kind of a all three are all together as one story. I don't really see it as, I mean, I can choose my favorite part of the three, but I see it as one big overarching story. But I do remember that when I watched Revolutions, because I had seen Reloaded and the original, I was so excited to see what they were going to do next with The Matrix. I mean, like, being in The Matrix. So, like, with the first one, it was the basic things, and then with Reloaded, like, you know, you're bringing people back to life, and you're flying and stuff. And then all of a sudden, for Revolutions, half of it's in the real world, where you can't do these flying things and all these different cool things. And so I remember being a bit disappointed, but also understanding, like, okay, it's a different type of battle. Now we're getting mech battles, and everything has a blue tint, instead of, like, kung fu and everything with the green tint. You know what I mean?
No, and I'd actually agree with you. If you forced me and said, okay, you're picking the Animatrix is cheating, you have to pick one of the three, I think I would lean towards Reloaded too, because of that speech with the architect, because it was so different, because it was almost like this M. Night Shyamalan with a hook ending, and because we knew that Revolutions was coming, so I knew that we would get the closure. So that's why I didn't feel betrayed. I felt like it was a cliffhanger. I felt like it was a to be continued, the way a to be continued would have been done in like a TV. What do you call it? Not series, season
like
finale.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah. That season cliffhanger. Like, you gotta wait, and they didn't make us wait that long because they shot them together. I believe it was like 6 months later. It was like the same year. So I thought that was so cool. And that's the thing. That's the other thing. Like I said, I jumped all the way in. So I'm online reading the comics as they're released. I'm playing Enter the Matrix video game, where you have the Niobian ghost characters. Their missions in the game that, you know, start before Reloaded starts and then takes you into Reloaded. So there's stuff that happens, you know, those cutscenes, which I actually, there's a video that has all the Enter the Matrix cutscenes on my channel. That's what I'm saying. Those cutscenes, to me, are part of the film. And that's what I think a lot of people missed out on. And it's unfortunate, because in that way, I felt like that aspect of the product was ahead of its time, just how they made it this all-encompassing experience. And they're not, you can get the main points and you can follow the story with just the three films. But that's one of the motivations behind this channel, is when you experienced all the different parts of media, things just fall into place. And a lot of that, like I said, when we're talking about picking a favorite and Reloaded, a lot of that was playing Enter the Matrix. A lot of that was feeling like I had already had this behind the scenes take. You know, when I saw the movie and I'm like, right, that's this part. Oh, that's this part, you know? And it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It's, but, you know, at the time, that's like my peak of gaming. And, you know, the fact that this game or these games are part of my favorite movie, it was just incredible. It was an incredible experience.
And that actually leads me perfectly to a great segue into my next question, which was, Okay, now I understand why you like The Matrix so much. A lot of what you're saying resonates with me as well. But what made you want to go one step further and say, okay, I love this so much, so I want to make Neo-Matrixology.
Okay,
And
now if you look at.
when did you make it? How long has it been up? And do you have a website in addition to Neo-Matrixology, or is it just a YouTube channel, or I know you have a Twitter, but what else is out there from you?
Right now, it's just the Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube channel. I'm focusing on the YouTube channel. There's no website. I figured, if the audience, it's kind of one of those if you build it, they will come thing. And if I've got a full baseball field, then I'll go ahead and invest in the website. But for now, I just wanted to focus on the YouTube channel. And it's funny because if you look at the timestamps, the channel was actually started in 2008. So I started the channel in 2008 just so I had something to host the Matrix Online videos that I was making for my faction.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so with the Matrix Online, you had three servers. You had Vector Hostile, which is the server I was on, Recursion and Syntax. The difference there is Recursion and Syntax had heavy communities that did role play in the game. There were a lot of different people making their own fan fiction stories in their online role play. Now, Vector Hostile, my server was different because it had open player versus player. You hear people talk about PvP, that's what they mean. And basically, what I liked about it was that, once you hit a certain level, like the max was 50, but I believe, I don't remember if it was 14 or 15, somewhere in there, nine maybe, but one of those teen kind of, or double digit, early double digit numbers, you could just be attacked. And, on the other servers, you had to select that you were in PvP or in a PvP area to fight. But on Vector, once you hit a certain level, you could be killed. And I like that because that made there be more action by default. You could just run into. So a lot of, for those who don't know, there were three factions. You could be a Zion, a Machine, or a Merovingian. So of course, most people came into the game, stayed Zion. I was a Machine. So there was a lot of action for me. There were a lot of Zion to fight. There were a lot of there were less Merovingian, but this way I didn't have to wait, I guess, for a chance to fight. Like if I wanted to, snipe low levels at Mara Central, which was like the main phone, that because that's the phone that it started you with when you started the game. So,
Okay.
I could just go, I could just go play basically. But the downside of that was that nobody on Vector wanted to do role playing in game. So, our faction kind of made a name on actually role playing on a server where it wasn't cool to role play. We were the geeks of the Matrix, if you will, in the Vector Hostile sense. So, that's one of the things I did. I got the Fraps application, and I would take these, recorded video screen caps and mix it with, like I said, our storyline merged the Matrix and the Terminator storyline. So I would take Matrix movie clips and Terminator movie clips and video game clips and make these montage kind of videos. And I'm like, well, I got to put it somewhere to show it to my faction mates. So I put it on YouTube. So that's why I created the channel back in 2008. The game ended in 2009. So, I'm sorry.
Year after you created the channel, and the game ended, and thus
Right.
ending
The game ended,
the
right.
content you were putting on there. So
Right. So
you
I
switched,
just
I'm
left the YouTube
guessing.
channel alone. The YouTube
Okay.
channel was just sitting there. I never did anything with it. I never put anything on. I wish that I had started this project back then. But yeah, you fast forward to, and I had been unplugged from the internet for a little bit, just in, or rather not the internet, but social media. I just kind of took a break. And when I came back to YouTube, I was, seeing all these Matrix videos, and I'm like, well, since when is it, this kind of this Matrix fest of videos, like, what I miss. And I ran into the whole like the Smith is not the one, and like all these theories. And I'm like, all right, guys, see what happens. I leave the internet and everybody goes crazy and loses their mind. Like, what are you guys talking about?
So you had to
So a
come
lot of
back
that
in order to educate,
set the record
basically.
straight. Now, the other thing that happened, like I said, a lot because of the Vector experience being so limited in role play in the Matrix Online. A lot of my role play I had on the forum. The Matrix Online forum was a community where all three servers of players could mix and communicate. You know, I mean, the forum thing isn't as popular as it once was, but back then, you know, posting to a forum was like communication, right? So a lot of my factions fan fiction was there. So when I decided to put this channel together and everything, I went to, you know, dig up some of that old stuff, and it wasn't there. Like, it's almost like it's completely gone. I mean, the official Matrix Online site is gone. It's scrubbed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was devastated. You know, it was like all that. I mean, I don't want to say it was hard work. It was fun work, but it was still like a lot, you know, like a lot of my fandom was there. A lot of my, what I would consider, you know, artistic writing in terms of, like I said, fan fiction and are continuing the story. That was one of the fun things about those who chose to role play in the Matrix Online. Like, we really felt like we were continuing the story. We didn't know that there were going to be any more movies ever. So it was just kind of like this open forum to explore and create the Matrix universe. And like, the developers were really cool about that kind of stuff. And, you know, they were on the forums too. And you just felt like you were part of continuing the story. So when I saw that that wasn't there anymore, like, I was really, really motivated to, like I said, set the record straight, let people know the different canon that did happen with the Matrix Online, the different storylines and plot lines that were part of the actual story. And then about a month into making videos, like, I wanted to get that stuff out of the way. I wanted to get the Smith is not the one theories and the stuff. Like, there was, like, basically in any Matrix video on YouTube, you get one of three comments. Okay. I'm more speaking of like the more popular sites, you know, the sites with, you know, millions of subscribers. If they do a Matrix video, you're going to get the same repeat comment. You're going to get Neo's not the one, Agent Smith is the one. You're going to get the Matrix is inside a Matrix, you know, the Inception rule. Or you're going to get, oh, by the way, Sophia Stewart really wrote the Matrix. So I had to get those things out of the way first. I had to address those videos and just say, hey guys, this is what it is. Okay. That way, when my channel grows, I don't have to always be in the comments having this conversation or debate. I can just say, go watch that video and get back to me. But once I finished that, or rather, actually, when I finished those first two topics, because those were the major ones that needed to be dealt with. And, you know, I found out where that theory kind of originated from. It was like this Reddit thing. And then the film theorists made their videos and it like got really, really popular. And like I said, it set the record straight. So I did those two videos, and I think that was last July. And then the very next month, August, they announced The Matrix 4. So, you know, I'm taking on this project thinking that there's not going to be any more Matrix movies ever. And then as soon as I start, they're saying there's more Matrix movies. So that was like a sign. I'm like, okay, I have to do this now. And yeah. And then after that, it was kind of like, as the casting news and they're saying, okay, we're bringing back Neo and Trinity, and Keanu Reeves and Carrie-Anne Moss are going to reprise their roles. And I'm like, okay, well, I can report the news, and, you know, just kind of became its own thing. And I've just been, you know, doing it since and excited about the movie. I know how these things go. You know, once the movie is released, things are going to slow down, but we got some time before then, and hopefully by then I can get out a lot of the stuff about the original trilogy that I've got. I mean, I've got a whole notebook full of stuff here, so.
Yeah, sure. I do have some of that as well. I think not to the same extent that you do, but it's great to have like fans coming out again and talking about everything like this. And
To answer your question, that was a lot of it. That was a lot of the motivation to start the channel, is what you're talking about, that connection with fans. Because in the Matrix Online, that connection was there. I mean, one of the things we were talking about with the original Matrix movie, like, I noticed in the Matrix Online, a lot of those things, you know, that I liked in the first film, people who played the Matrix Online liked. They liked, you know, like electronic music and kung fu and technology and action movies. And, you know what I'm saying? So you have this kind of foundation of points of relation. So that community, it just clicked. And that connection through the Matrix fans, I missed that. I was actually kind of looking for it. I was like playing like this online Terminator game, and it was fun. But, you know, that right when Skydance, because it started with Skydance, and when all the contract stuff came up for Dark Fate, they kind of I mean, the game is still active, but like they're not updating it anymore. So like the community kind of died. But even then, before the community died, it wasn't as, you know, it's more open, so it wasn't as tight knit as the Matrix Online fans are. And that's kind of what I was kind of trying to get back. It's like I want that connection back. I want to be able to connect with other Matrix fans. And like you said, you know, as soon as I started this, I mean, you know, in the beginning, I saw it more so on Twitter. I'm starting to finally see it now on YouTube. But yeah, the Twitter community really kind of showed me that immediately. Like, yeah, we're still here. I mean, we're scattered now. There's no like real one place. And that was kind of the goal. It's like, well, okay, let's kind of find one place where we can kind of all connect and get back together.
It's amazing. Okay, so I guess that kind of leads me to one of the main reasons why I wanted to connect with you is that I've played what I think my favorite. I liked Enter the Matrix. I really loved the live action scenes, like in addition. But the gameplay, the graphics were something that kind of lacked a little bit for me there. And that's why I really loved Path of Neo. You know, the other video game, the Matrix video game where it's just you.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely played Path of Neo. Now I'm trying to remember. I don't know if I bought it or rented it. Because I remember beating it and just kind of being done. But yeah, no. And the thing about the Path of Neo is like that's the one game where like you know at the end, did you get to the end? I don't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah,
yes, I did. Yeah, so that's you know you got that.
They know that they're just. It was just so much fun because they knew that they weren't taking it seriously. It was like part like
right. Okay. That's what I'm saying. That's the one installment. That's the one Matrix Media installment where they're like, okay, this is just button mashing merch. We're not being serious. This is not canon. Just knock yourself out, having fun playing the damn game.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, there was parts where it was just like, okay, we know you want to play as Neo, so we'll just have you do it. And then there are other parts where, I don't know if you remember this, where you as the one have to save four different people who are ready to be unplugged, and so you have to fight the agents or police who are coming to try to get these people before they can be unplugged. So that was really fun. Yeah. And then as you said, like you get to the end and then you just have an interview. Like you just have the two Wachowskis sitting there as like a blue and pink 5-bit character saying, yeah, we know the ending will not be exciting. So let's just give you like a giant mega thing to fight, just like in like classic video games. It was hilarious. It was like so much fun.
And then, you know, even before that end part there, I mean, you had the giant ants and you had like weird stuff in there. Like there's parts of the game that get weird, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can only kill the ants with the fire sticks in the very like upside down, topsy-turvy. It was weird. But the one game I never played was The Matrix Online, which is something that you played extensively. And I know that you recently created a YouTube video talking about what happens in the history. So I was wondering if you could just break it down for us common folk over at Cyberpunk Matrix. What happens in a very general sense in the Matrix Online? And is there anything there that you think may be alluded to or appear in Matrix 4?
Yeah, so that's what... So the long answer to your question is what we discuss in the original Matrix podcast. So that's with Vesuvius and another guy named Starshore in terms of what we think, what storylines or plot points might show up in the Matrix 4. But as far as like the most general description of the Matrix 4, or, I'm sorry, the Matrix Online, is that it was, you know, an online game and multiplayer online game, an MMORPG, you know, role-playing game. Like I said, I was on the server that had the least role-playing, but you know, it came out in the time of like the WoW era and the Star Wars Battlefront era. So, you know, it was that style game where you had these, you know, online environments, and you know, it was a very, to quote Keanu Reeves, ambitious video game. You know, it was originally launched by Warner through Monolith Productions. Monolith was the video game company, but, you know, Warner was the parent company. And the storyline was written by Paul Chadwick, who was a comic book creator who had done three of the Matrix comics, you know, the official Matrix comics. So, you know, he was appointed by the Wachowskis. That's why, you know, the Matrix Online community, we go so hard to let people know, because people say, oh, well, that's not canon just because it's a video game. It's like, no, you have to understand. Chadwick wrote Matrix comics. You know, Chadwick was appointed by the Wachowskis. Anything that he did had to be approved of by them. I mean, it's, I get it. The Matrix 4 could come out and pretend like none of it happened. They could erase all of it. They could say it was all nothing. You know, they could not address it at all. But at the same time, like I said, when we started that game, we started that game with the idea that this was the continuation of the story. This is what happens after revolutions. It was sold to us as this is the era of the truce. Neo sacrificed himself for peace, and we are in the version of the Matrix that is that era. So that was a lot of the appeal. And yeah, I mean, that's, to me, that's like, I guess, the most basic summary of what was going on there. It was an online game that for us was a continuation of the Matrix trilogy.
What happens in the game itself? I mean, like, because I never played it, like I said, and I saw that, I mean, it's not going to spoil anything because the game's not even, you can't even play it anymore, but I read somewhere that Morpheus dies at the very beginning. Like, what?
And that happened early. So I believe the game ended on chapter 12. So you had like chapters and then subchapters. So in chapter one, you have chapter 1.1, 1.2, and 1.3. Morpheus dies in 1.3. So yeah, it was relatively early. I was highly upset when it happened in real time.
I can imagine. Like I saw something with Lotus and I was like, Morpheus dies at least in the beginning, and he dies in a very simple way, apparently. I don't even know exactly how he dies, but like, what? How could that be?
there was an assassin that we ended up tracking back to the Merovingian. But yeah, it almost, at the time, like I said, it felt like a cheap shot at the time. And as I mentioned, you know, the Wachowskis had to approve of everything. So they, you know, they were on board with the idea. They didn't come up with it specifically, or I can't verify that, but I know that they, you know, allowed it to be part of the game. I think what was going on there was that Chadwick was, you know, trying to tap into the emotions of the fan base and, you know, do something big and do something that would, you know, get our attention, so to speak, or to be different from, you know, what we were used to. And, you know, right or wrong, that's how it played out. In terms of, you know, getting an emotional response, I mean, it definitely tapped into emotions. People were upset about it. I did like that later on he comes back as a simulation, or, you know, a simulacrum. So, yeah, I did a video on that part of the storyline specifically, just because I think that that is the most likely way that the Yahya Abdul-Mateen role might be part of the Matrix 4. I've spoke at length about that because, you know, everywhere you turn, you see the, oh, Yahya Abdul-Mateen will be playing a, quote, young Morpheus role. And I also did a video kind of tracking the history of that rumor, because that rumor has been around since prior to this script even being developed. So, that rumor's got some history to it. But with this not being a prequel or a reboot, you know, I think that him coming back as a program version of Morpheus is the likely explanation. That doesn't mean that Morpheus was a program the whole time, because that's what I'm saying. With the Matrix Online, you had the human Morpheus being assassinated and then the program Morpheus showing up. So
maybe there'll be a program Morpheus.
Yeah, that's something that I could see happening in the Matrix 4. I could see that storyline kind of playing out there.
And there might also be a program Neo and a program Trinity, I imagine, right? Which would explain how they survive.
Okay, so I'll give you a little preview into my upcoming video, the one I'm working on now. and that is a way that it could go. I've seen some online theories kind of more speaking to your point there, and that is also something that did happen in the Matrix 4. You did have Trinity come back just inside the Matrix. Now, because that happened more towards the end of the game, you know, like I said, Warner Brothers was the parent company in the beginning, but at one point they sold the game to Sony. And when that happened, a lot of changes happened. And it was kind of like the beginning of the end. You know, Sony had Star Wars. Sony didn't really care. So, you know, towards the end, the budget got pulled, and it went from Paul Chadwick writing stuff to a developer named Rarebit. You know, he's kind of like the last man standing. And he had to get all his stuff approved by the Wachowskis as well. but like I feel like certain plot lines weren't fully developed or fully explained. So how Trinity returned, you know, some people will say it was DNA in the Matrix and there's this like biological interface program kind of storyline, but I don't feel personally that that was fully explained. So, you know, like I said, she does come back. We confirm that it was her, but how she returned, I felt was still left open-ended by the end of the game. What I will say is when Morpheus goes rogue, when he, before his assassination, the reason for him, the motivation for him, you know, kind of taking on this whole terrorist activity role and exposing the Matrix role was that he requested Neo's remains, his human remains, be returned to Zion so that he could be buried and, you know, that there could be a memorial and that kind of thing. And the machines refused to return Neo's remains. And, you know, in this, well, they also have Trinity's remains too, right? Because she died in the Machine City in the hovercraft crash. So they didn't return either one of their bodies. So, yeah, we could say that they're just programs in the Matrix 4. That's possible, but they still have their bodies. So I don't know that they necessarily couldn't have just restored them and reinserted them into the Matrix.
Like restored their bodies or restored their minds? Kind of thing?
Yeah, no. So both. That'd be both. Like, you know, basically like... I don't want to go the cloning route, but you know, just that revived route, if you will. Like, you know, they had the technology to just bring them back to life, perhaps.
Reload their bodies and revolve, I guess, revolutions. Yeah, just restart. All right. I feel like that kind of covered most of what I wanted to ask. Is there anything else that you think that people excited about Matrix 4 should know from Matrix Online? Got any other ideas?
That's a good question, because I made this parallel in one of the compilation leaks videos. Like, you know, I was following social media, and when I saw stuff that like looked like, you know, good action clips that might be shots that will be used in the films, I, you know, made compilation videos of, you know, the stuff I found. And I saw a lot of helicopter activity. I mean, a lot of helicopter shots. So one thing that was in the Matrix 4 was a storyline of the General. And the General was an interesting character, because the General's character was basically a machine, one of the Sentinels. The General was supposed to be the team lead or the head Sentinel in charge of destroying Zion. Okay. So in the Matrix Online, his character is actually the Sentinel who basically his mission was stopped because of Neo's truce. And, you know, he basically was against the idea that they did not finish the mission, that they did not terminate the humans. You know, that was his purpose. His purpose was to destroy Zion. So he was not able to fulfill his mission. So he organizes, you know, the Sentinels and the free thinking machines that are upset with the truce and that disagree with the truce. And they, you know, get into the Matrix and start wreaking havoc and more so causing chaos. At first, they drop these leaflets saying, you know, don't trust the Frenchmen, and try to align themselves with Niobe. And then later on, they end up aligned with the Merovingian. But yeah, there's a whole storyline there. But the reason why I brought that up is because, like I said, when I looked at these different action shots from the San Francisco shooting, saw a lot of helicopter, black helicopter. And what does he have in the Matrix Online? He travels by way of black helicopter. We also saw a lot of like Hummers and, you know, just this kind of militarized police force stuff in terms of, you know what I mean? In terms of like the stuff that we've seen picture wise and stuff like that. And I don't remember there being like a whole lot of, I mean, we saw the SWAT guys and stuff like that in the architect building the first one, you know, guns, lots of guns when they have to go get Morpheus out. But, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of Hummers. I mean, they had the black helicopter on the roof, but I mean, I felt like this what we've seen in these leaks, I feel like is a lot more militarized. And that militarized look just reminded me of the General in the Matrix Online. Like, I really do hope that it goes that route. I do expect some Easter eggs. I don't think the Matrix 4 is going to be the Matrix Online movie. Like, I don't think it's going to play out like that. But
there might be some references.
You know, when I look,
Easter eggs, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Maybe some references or Easter eggs you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, Easter eggs. I think there might be a handful of some really solid Easter eggs there. And even when I look at the comics like the B-166ER trial that was, you know, basically played out in the Renaissance episodes of the Animatrix. Mm-hmm. Also, you have I Can't, which is a Matrix comic, which is another story of the kid who also had an Animatrix episode. So we've kind of seen them play with, you know, the different media and making sure that there's, like you said, these Easter eggs. They might not necessarily be full blown prequels, even though I consider the Renaissance episodes prequels. I'll say this. I'll be disappointed if there are zero Matrix Online references.
Well, I feel like they've got it, at least, hopefully. I mean, at least I'm really glad Delana Wachowski at least is in the team, and they're bringing back a lot of the same people. Do you know if, was that Paul Chadwick, if he's in the writing team or is he not?
I don't think so. I mean, I've followed him on Twitter and some social media. I don't see any official announcements that he's involved with anything. It looks like he's doing his own thing. But again, the fact that they had to approve of everything, you know, and all that information is out there because I've seen this kind of pattern of, you know, making these references to the other media, I just would be really shocked if they just said, you know, we didn't like any of that stuff Chadwick did on the online, so we're just going to ignore that. You know, I just feel like it'd be out of character.
Okay. So we have to go soon, but there's one last question I would love to ask you. You've probably noticed that there's a lot of different actors that are being cast from Sense8. And obviously, so Wachowski's, I think it was both of them at first, and now it's just Lana Wachowski that's working with Sense8 because it was canceled.
Have you seen it? Okay, yeah, no. So like you said, they both started doing it, but somewhere in there, it just became Lana.
That's right, yeah. And so, yeah, I haven't seen the series. It just, the premise never really interested me too much. I think I saw a bit of the first episode and I was just like, it's not cyberpunky enough. Like I'm curious, but not enough to want to continue. But because they're having all these different actors and because also specifically, I know I've heard that a couple of the episodes at the end were written by David Mitchell, who did Cloud Atlas, which the Wachowskis worked with as well. So like you have David Mitchell writing these great books and then adapting one of his books, Cloud Atlas, into a movie with the Wachowskis, and then also coordinating with them at Sense8. Do you feel like there's any clues from David Mitchell's work or Sense8's series that the Wachowskis may bring over to The Matrix 4, or is it just actors and nothing else past that?
This is an interesting question. I have seen Sense8. I have seen Cloud Atlas. Why phrase this? Okay, so I agree. It was not cyberpunky. It was definitely more like you know, these supernatural powers, these more psychic powers. You know, it wasn't real based in technology in any real way, other than the bug hacker character trying to, you know, protect a couple of characters' identities and you know, keep them off the grid. But so they did have a hacker, and actually that character he was seen in San Francisco in the dance party in the middle of the street with Lana Wachowski and Carrie Ann Moss and a bunch of fans. So I don't know if he's in the film. If he is, I'm guessing it's a minor role because he wasn't, you know, announced or anything. But you know, there might be another Sense8 character that nobody's talked about in there. So it's like this kind of like Sense8 reunion going on, right?
I see on Twitter that a lot of Sensis are like saying, oh, it's a Sensi reunion or Sense8 reunion of all these actors.
Yeah, there's like you've got three of the eight plus potentially two. So there's a bunch of them there. I'll put it that way.
I think it was Duni Bae, the Korean actress that was in the cyberpunk like short story in Cloud Atlas, and I think she's also in Sense8. I'm just waiting for her to be
she
out.
Actually, me too. She also had a short cameo in Jupiter Ascending, so I almost expected her to be in this. So the fact that she hasn't been announced, I don't know if they have a part for her, but I would be surprised for her to not be in it anywhere. I mean, and that's really how I was going to answer your question more so, is that what I do see here is this consistency of Lana Wachowski liking to go to the well and going to people that she's worked with before and had a good experience with and bringing them back. You know, if you notice, Cypher is, he was in Sense 8 as Will Gorski's father. So, you know, you've got a lot of actors who kind of carry over from one project to another, how we're talking about Duna and everything. So when we talk about Mitchell, I don't know. I mean, because, you know, Cloud Atlas was very, very, very different. It actually took me a couple viewings to, like, really for it to soak in. Like, the first time, I think I didn't even finish it because it was so long. And but once I got through it, I did appreciate it. Again, it was something very different. So I appreciate when they, you know, do something that kind of goes against the normal formula of stuff. As far as series goes, you could say Sense8 had that aspect too. So I think that might be something Matrix-y that we might see from Mitchell's work, is just that, you know, finding creative ways to not follow the typical movie formula. Now, the thing about Sense8 is Sense8 as a series was very, like, sexual in nature. There's, you know, like, a lot of graphic sex scenes and stuff like that. So I don't know if a whole lot of that is going to carry over into The Matrix 4 just because it's a big film. But in terms of casting, you know, you've got a lot of attractive actresses who have been casted for this thing. So, you know, in terms of story. Hey, go ahead.
There was Priyanka Chopra, and then there was, Ellen?
Indira Ibarra, and Ellen Hallman. So you got some lookers in there, yeah. But yeah, as far as story, I, to your point, I think they're going to go back to the cyberpunk well and keep it real Matrix-y. I said in terms of the writing, I think it's more of a comfortability with working with Mitchell and the fact that they've, you know, been on the last several projects together. And I think that's more of what we're going to see. I hope, anyway. I think that, you know, when you kind of get that synergy going, when you've worked with somebody for a while, you know, things come out even better because they're even, you know, they're kind of getting to a point where you can read each other's minds and, you know, you're just kind of in sync. So I'm hoping that it's all the pieces are in place for it to be good. And I said this in a tweet today, because somebody said something about, you know, is it going to be good or not? You know, and I think a lot of people are going to have unrealistic expectations that they set themselves that are not going to be met. So I think there's going to be a lot of people who trash the movie just because they had a preconceived notion of what should happen. And then when that doesn't happen, they're going to rebel, you know, same way they did with Reloaded and Revolutions. But, you know, still going to make a lot of money, I think, and it'll probably still be a good movie. So.
Awesome. Well, I'm super excited. I know you are. But so thank you so much, Lazarus, for accepting to share your infinite knowledge about Matrix Online and Matrix in general.
It's not infinite. I mean, I learn new things all the time, and that's part of the fun of the experience. That's why I invite people to, you know, comment and share their experience, because I mean, somebody was telling me about this this prisoner parallel with Neo in the first film that I never noticed, and with the show The Prisoner. And they were like, you know, these, and there's actually a shot when he's running through being chased by Smith. There's a shot, one of the televisions in the apartments has The Prisoner on. So, you know, there's Easter eggs everywhere, man. Yeah, there's stuff all over this thing. I believe it was like a 60s show. That's the thing. It was before my time. I didn't even know that the show existed. So, you know, there's just stuff, you know, like I said, there's always something to learn. There's so many layers, you know, and that's what I'm hoping, you know, about your last question with, you know, David Mitchell. And that's what I was going to say. John Tall was the cinematographer for Cloud Atlas. He also did Vanilla Sky, which wasn't a Wachowski project, but this is somebody else who's kind of become a repeat offender with, I think he was the cinematographer for Jupiter Ascending. So, you know, that they put together a really, really solid team.
So much to look forward to. Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I'm not going to set my expectations too high, but from what I've seen so far, thinking it's going to be good things.
Like I said before, when you get to sequel 4 or 5, I mean, at least for me, I'm going to lower the bar a little bit. I'm not going to have the expectation that it's going to blow the original Matrix out of the water. I mean, the original Matrix is its own masterpiece, and like I said, it followed the rules. It changed the rules. So now that that's happened, you know, just enjoy the movie. It's just a movie. I joke about the whole, you know, Keanu Reeves holding up the picture that The Matrix is a documentary, but it's still science fiction in my opinion. So I'm just going to enjoy the story that they have to tell, hopefully enjoy the story that they have to tell. I'm not going to say that it's good without having seen it, but I think that if you go in with an open mind, it's probably going to be a fun experience.
All right, yeah, definitely. So thank you again, Lazarus, so much for coming to the interview and sharing what you know.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Yeah, and if you wanted to go more in depth with the Matrix Online questions or the story there, you know, Vesuvius definitely said he's willing to have a conversation and just kind of recap stuff. Cause like I said, when you want to go into details, he's basically the curator of the Matrix Online. He's the guy who, you know, he's got all the screenshots and he saved all the missions and he's just got his head really, really wrapped into that universe. Like I said, I consider him the curator. I mean, when I visualize him in my mind, I like see this digital librarian from one of the constructs who just has all the Matrix Online knowledge stored in his brain. So, you know, you've got some resources that you can reach out to if you want to go really deep into the Matrix Online storyline and lore.
Definitely, yeah. Okay, thank you. So, thank you so much. So, we'll do.